Trevor Zamparelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Good morning. It's great to be back. Speaking of which, back in April 2021, we spoke to my next guest about trials going on in Ireland to help people with treatment-resistant depression by using magic mushrooms. Yes. Now, since then, the fascinating, if you haven't seen it, do watch it. It is fascinating. The fascinating How to Change Your Mind documentary has hit Netflix, looking at scientific use of LSD, of mushrooms and other illegal substances. On the verge of publishing the data about the mushrooms trials, Dr. John Kelly, psychiatrist and lecturer at Talla Hospital and TCD, is here with me now. It's great to finally meet you in person. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Jennifer. And thanks for having me back. And yeah, good to see you in person too.
Yes, it's great to have you in. So it's not published yet, but what can you tell us about the Compass Pathway trial?
Yeah, so this is a Compass-funded study. This is the largest ever study to date by a long way. 233 participants throughout North America and Europe took part in this study over about 4 years, I suppose. And we're the Irish side of this study, and this should be published on Thursday, I hope. And really, what this is showing is that people with treatment-resistant depression have a 37% response rate when they receive 25 milligrams of psilocybin. So those participants that received 10 milligrams had an 18% response rate, and those participants that received 1 milligram had a 17% response rate. And by response rate, I mean 50% or more reduction in depressive symptoms.
Okay. And just for people who are not familiar with psilocybin is what you find in magic mushrooms and LSD and that kind of thing. Okay. Can you explain just how psilocybin works biologically in the brain? What it actually does?
Yeah. So it works across several levels, and there's more and more data being generated both preclinically and clinically. And I suppose the main action appears to be on serotonin system and these 5-HT2 receptors in the frontal cortex and various other parts of the brain. Now, downstream of that, it may result in neuroplastic effects, enhancing connectivity between different brain cells. And at the connectomic level, which other research groups look at via MRI scans, it alters brain connectivity. And that altered brain connectivity can last up to 1 month.
Okay.
So it's across multiple levels that psilocybin with psychological support works. And it's always delivered in the context of psychological support. So people are prepared for it. A lot of psychoeducation, at least 3 sessions. People have a therapist with them for the duration of the dosing day.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because you were doing, these tests that were being done, they were guided trips, right? Mm. They were guided trips with counselling sessions before and after. Mm. Why was that so important?
Well, because these are powerful chemicals which do result in acute alterations of people's thought processes, emotional state and perception. So it's important to prepare people as best as possible for this experience. And that's why these trials are set up with a sort of therapy beforehand. And this would usually comprise of 3 sessions with sort of psychoeducation piece predominantly.
Okay.
And then if people during the experience need some support, the therapist is there with them for relaxation exercises or grounding. And some people like to know that therapist is there even if they don't really need them. And of course, it's set up so that the music is going, the standards playlist and eye shades to try to delve into the experience.
And speaking of that experience, I mean, it is all about set and setting, isn't it? You know, the state of mind and the people you're around and the environment you're in. How long would that guided trip last for? And what would happen if, you know, if they're lying in a hospital bed with their counsellor or a psychiatrist beside them, and they would just go on an 8-hour trip? Is that what would happen?
Well, there's a special room set up to be as relaxing and as comfortable as possible. There's a bed, there's the headphones and the eye shades, and the therapist is there. Now, the psychiatrist is not in the room, but is in the
okay.
building.
Okay.
And yes, about 6 to 8 hours is a typical sort of duration. But don't forget, this was a dose-finding study, so some people got 10 milligrams and some people got 1 milligram. So 1 milligram sub-threshold, it's a microdose. It doesn't really do much, and that's what the data is showing, although okay. we're seeing a bit of a placebo signal in that. So again, the 25 milligrams was more effective than the 10 milligrams and the 1 milligram. Now, a lot of people probably knew that beforehand, but it's great to get the data there to show people, and it'll be great when it's out so people can go through the nuances and the nooks and crannies of the paper and the yeah. data. So that's a positive
stuff.
Thing. Yeah,
it is a positive thing. Now, the Netflix show How to Change Your Mind was based on Michael Pollan's book, which you read. Can you explain to listeners briefly how bad research methods in the 60s actually led to these drugs being made illegal, even for scientists?
Yeah, I mean, there were lots of studies in the 50s and 60s, and the methodological rigor was poor, and they certainly didn't have hold the standards that we're sort of adhering to now. And I suppose they didn't really have the set and setting right with some of it, and the psychological support that we mentioned. So I suppose that, together with a sort of things getting out of hand, led to various governments making these substances illegal. So there was a gap in research for several decades. I mean, there were a few isolated pockets of research, but mainly it was a sort of a gap. And this sort of restarted about 15 to 20 years ago. And now it's just sort of gaining momentum.
And now it's
momentum.
Kicking off. And yeah, now it's gaining yeah, momentum. Yeah. Now, last week, there were stories in the news of mushrooms helping people with alcoholism. Where else do you see applications for psilocybin helping people?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So last week in JAMA Psychiatry, Michael Bogenschutz published an interesting study. 95 participants, one group received two doses of psilocybin, and the other group received two doses of antihistamine. And in the group that received the psilocybin, there was a decrease in heavy alcohol use days at 32 weeks. So, wow. So that's quite, and that built on his 2015 study, where he only had 10 participants in that. So, you know, you can see an incremental progress in terms of numbers and quality. And that will, again, lay foundations for even larger studies in alcohol use disorder. So, you know, more broadly, it's going to be applicable to various addiction disorders.
Amazing. One of the most emotional parts of the program showed how people with terminal cancer were given a new perspective on the end of life. Now, if you were, or you could, I mean, would you be interested in that type of research?
Absolutely. Yeah. And those studies predated the depression studies. So yeah, I mean, they showed that people with end of life cancer, and then they've extended on to other end of life diseases, had improvements in mood and anxiety and quality of life for the remaining time that they had here. So yes, I'd be very interested in that. If anyone wants to look at that or fund that or collaborate on that, yeah, be it nationally or internationally, we'd certainly be interested in that as a really useful application for people, for the health service and for society.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the episodes of the show is about MDMA. And I just want to ask you, how close are we to that being licensed for use in medicine, and who would it help?
So MDMA is very close to being licensed in PTSD. So that's what they went after first, post-traumatic stress disorder. And I have heard through the grapevine end of this year, but, you know, I'm not exactly sure when that'll be licensed. But this is MDMA-assisted psychotherapy for PTSD being available very, very soon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Some of the studies in the Netflix show had really healthy patients taking high doses of LSD. What benefit is that to science?
Yeah, and there are studies in psilocybin looking at 50 milligrams. So that's a really big dose. And I think what they're really trying to do there is to get a ceiling dose, to get the, you know, get some additional safety data on those high doses. I'm not sure that'll be the dose that'll be, you know, used widespread manner. But don't forget, maybe some people, different doses would suit different people. This idea of a personalized psychedelic therapy paradigm. And not only dose, we need to look at interval. The studies we've talked about in relation to Compass are a single dose. So, you know, could perhaps a dose a week later or a month later, you know, increase the therapeutic response rate. Because don't forget, I mean, we do have to manage expectations here as well. A 37.7% response rate, that's a lot of people that didn't respond, right? Yeah. And at 12 weeks, it drops to 20%, right? So can we look at the dose, look at the dosing interval to increase the response rate? And there are all sorts of interesting things that one could look at to boost this therapeutic response rate to help people.
Dr. Kelly, I have to ask you, because there's people listening to this now going, hey, your man's on the radio there talking about mushrooms helping people and LSD and MDMA. It must be exciting to finally now have the data to go, well, this is the data and this is working here. However, you know, with the damage, inverted commas, that Nixon did in the 60s, how can we overcome the stigma of these type of drugs making it into medicine? Can you see it happening slowly? Or do you think, oh, this is going to be another few years before people come round to the idea of this type of therapy?
It's starting to happen, and it will take a few more years because the phase 3 data needs to be collected. Okay. And hopefully that will start in 2023. But I think now's the time that we plan this out. And I would like to see this, provided the phase 3 data reproduces the phase 2 data, if you like, and then we could perhaps integrate it into the HSE, and we could start rolling it out, essentially. Yeah. And so I think, to answer your question, people will be convinced and clinicians will be convinced by the data, and they want results.
Okay. Yeah. Will you come back to me in 2023 when phase three of the data is rolled out and let me know? And just finally, are there any events where people can find out more about these treatments? Is there talks happening?
There's a 14th of October in Trinity. There's a public event, Novel Treatments of Depression, with Professor Declan McLaughlin and Professor Andrew Harkin. And can I mention the HRB? I'm going to have to apologise
to the
Health Research Board now, because I'm breaking an embargo by 24 hours. So sorry. But I also would like to thank them most sincerely for giving us some funding in Trinity College Institute of Neuroscience and the School of Medicine at Trinity College Dublin and Talla Hospital. And this is a sort of money for a preclinical study, mainly looking at how psychedelics affect the immune system. And this is Professor Andrew Hart, Professor Veronica Keane, Dr. Jack Prendeville, Senator Lynn Ruan, and Gareth Tormey. So we are highly appreciative of them, and it will kickstart a translational psychedelic science research program in Trinity. So
exciting times.
Sure.
Exciting times. So the 14th of October, if you want to go along, is an event if you want to find out more. Dr. John Kelly, psychiatrist and lecturer at TCD and Talla University Hospital, thank you so much for joining me. I'll see you in 2023.
Yeah, see you then, Jennifer.
For sure.
Jennifer Zaffarelli. Weekday morning from 9 on 2FM.